Support for Midwest Swing is brought to you by baseball.
The Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Chris Jimenez, and you're listening to Midwest Swing on the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
Hey, what's up? It is another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We're part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network, which you can find on Twitter at Zone Coverage MN. Excuse me. I'm your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon underscore Warren. You can call me B-Dub. I'm joined by Sticks. You can call him Ryan if you wish. You can find him on Twitter at 2_Canes with a Z. What's going on today, bud?
Not a whole lot. Just gearing up for this Twins game here. Excited to see how Fernando Romero does in his second major league start in a few minutes here.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how bummed out are you that it's not against Carlos Martinez?
I would have loved to see that matchup, but hopefully this pitching matchup maybe helps him come out victorious.
Yeah.
A little bit better than, say, pitching against Carlos Martinez may have.
I don't know much about John Gant, but I was on a St. Louis Cardinals podcast here that actually went up today, and it sounds like he's a fastballs mostly guy. So it'll be interesting to see because the Twins should be able to handle that quite well. Fernando Romero making a start in an NL park where he is going to have to hit is a little strange. I'm a little surprised the Twins didn't find a way to structure it so that wouldn't be the case. But at the end of the day, it's going to be interesting to see how he performs after that first start, which you and I had pretty good seats for, I might add. We talked about it already, but, you know, what are your expectations for him in this matchup against the Cardinals? Obviously a team that's rolling right now and is among the class of the National League.
Yeah, hope to see a little bit more of the same. Obviously, a pretty tough lineup with the Cards. Guys like Jose Martinez and Paul DeJong, who seem to come out of nowhere, but are real legit bats. Tommy Pham, I believe, is in the lineup tonight. So it'll be interesting. A tough little lineup for him to face. But hope to just see kind of more of the same. A guy who can show it's not too big for him, who can miss bats with both the fastball and the slider. If he can command his pitch tonight, show a little bit better control, then I think he's going to have some success.
Quick reminder for people, give us 5-star reviews on iTunes at Midwest Swing. You can find us there pretty easily if you look for us on the podcast side of things and not the St. Lunatics song from when Ryan was probably about 5 years old. But
I know the St. Lunatics. Come on now.
The Ticks in Maui. Sorry, I'm just rapping a little Nelly there. if people want to give us that 5-star review, we will revive the prize vault with some fun prizes. I'm going to look into getting some books that have been released recently, some Jay Jaffe stuff, maybe some Smart Baseball by Keith Law. Handful of things here that people will be interested in. I maybe could find an autographed baseball or something too. So, again, 5-star reviews on iTunes, huge for us. I think you can also get us on Stitcher and Libsyn if you have any questions. Feel free to hit us up. We are, and I didn't tell you this, but I think we're going to revive War Games, but under a different name. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, let's do it. What is it?
Stat Wars, like Star Wars, but with a T.
I like it, so, especially with the Solo movie coming out. It's good branding.
Then, right, exactly. And so then what we can do is like career ERA, you know, and I say Kyle Gibson and you say Jim Cott, and whoever's closer wins. And so
I like it.
That way we can do home runs. We can do whatever the flavor of the week, or in terms of how this show goes, bye week. B-I week, not B-Y-E. This isn't the football show. After every show, we can just kind of have our own music for however we want. It does probably mean, though, that William Hung will be out of the picture. But we can bring him back, too. I had to play that for you at the Twins game, though. I think people might appreciate that. If you missed it, you'll have to go back and listen to one of the last episodes of Locked On Twins. And again, too, we have departed Locked On Twins not because of anything that was going on there. It was just too much of a workload, and I just feel more beholden to zone coverage and to this program twice a week rather than every single weekday. And I tell you what, I have to be honest with you, I was starting to burn out. How about you?
I mean, I can talk baseball every day. It just gets a little, I mean, when you think about it, the fact that it is a daily game, but for going as long as we were going, it's tough to do a podcast every day about it necessarily.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah.
So let's look back at the White Sox series. Twins dropped the first one in epic fashion. Walk-off homer by this Trace Thompson cat that I've been talking about for a while. And there was a lot of second guessing about his pitch selection. That is Addison Reed, who gave it up. And I don't think it was as easy as just pumping the fast, or excuse me, going to off speed there. 3-1, he represents the winning run. And I don't know, it was a discussion I was having with Lavelle E. Neal III on Twitter. It was not an argument. I feel like it's easy to say throw the change up there or whatever, but 3-1, you're not putting on the winning run, especially a guy who can move like Thompson.
Right.
So I don't think there was an obvious pitch choice there.
No, yeah, I caught the discussion, and I agree with you. I mean, it's easy to second guess it in hindsight, but if he gets him to pop up, it's a great pitch, right?
Mm-hmm. So, well, and he pitches high in the zone with that fastball anyway.
Right. And I mean, that's just what Addison Reed is. I wouldn't have expected him to go anywhere else with it. You know, Trace Thompson just caught it good, and it wasn't the best pitch from Addison Reed. But like I said, if he gets underneath it, if it's a high pop up to the shortstop, it's a completely different discussion. And hey, good pitch, Addison Reed. So yeah. I wouldn't have expected him to go with anything else. And while Trace Thompson has a little pop, he's also, I think he was hitting 200 or under 200. And
very similar to Carlos Gomez at the time, he hit a walk-off against Addison Reed.
Very true, and although he may be sitting fastball, that doesn't mean Trace Thompson is going to knock the fastball out of the park necessarily. Right. He just happened to in that situation, so I didn't really see anything wrong with it. And I don't really blame, blame Addison Reed. He pitched well before that and, threw a bad pitch, but Jake Odorizzi is the one who couldn't hold a 5-1 lead in the game. I think it's more on Jake Reed than it is on, Jake Odorizzi than it is Addison Reed.
You just described their love child who's on the DL down at AAA.
Jake Reed, how's it going?
So, hey, I missed, so the second and third games Twins won. I missed most of yesterday's game driving back from Duluth for a quick overnight, and I just wanted to ask, I'm assuming you saw at least some of it. The Joe Mauer play where he scored the go-ahead run, ultimately the winning run. Dan Gladden said on the radio broadcast that it was more of a brain cramp by Yomer Sanchez than it was a heady play by Joe Mauer. Where do you stand on that?
Well, that was kind of my thought on it. If it was a heady play by Joe Mauer, it was a very very subtle heady veteran play. But I also saw it as more of a brain cramp by Sanchez. Like, oh, what is he doing?
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether if Mauer really did deke him that well, then credit to Joe. But I think it was more of a brain cramp by the third baseman in that scenario.
You can't rule it out, though. I mean, Joe.
I am not
sure I've ever seen Joe make a mistake on the field. I think there's one time in my life I've seen him thrown out on the bases, and it's kind of that white unicorn, or like the one time he struck out in high school.
Yeah.
It's something that happened, and maybe to him he just kind of shrugs it off and walks off the field. But I remember hearing a story about the time Joe struck out in high school and wasn't even aware that he'd never struck out. And everyone's looking at him like, dude, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine, whatever. So I imagine it's the same kind of deal.
He's very much like his manager in that sense on the base paths. Very heady, very smart, very astute baseball player. You can't rule it out, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was a very heady play by Joe Mauer. But just watching it live, it really looked like a whole what is he doing type of situation from Sanchez's point of view. So this game is about to start here. I just want to throw this in here. I've never don't watch a lot of Cardinals games. Busch Stadium is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I know the Twins only have two guys covering the series, and I know that the Twins are a little bit bummed about that. And Tom, who is obviously the boss of this program, Tom Schreier, the Laugh King of Minneapolis, he covered the Chicago series in person, and actually we've made plans. We're going to go to Kansas City at the end of the month.
Awesome.
We're starting to do some road series, so hopefully the Twins can help us figure that out. But they've been really good to us this year, so thank you so much for that. If anybody from the Twins is listening, but we're kind of kicking ouzelves for not buzzing over to St. Louis for a couple games too before I know they go to, you know, the Angels here, and then they come home for one against Seattle. But I tell you what, if there's a list of parks that I want to visit, Kansas City is pretty high on the list, but so too is the stadium in St. Louis.
Yep, I've been to Kansas City, but not pre-renovation. It was a while ago. I mean, Michael Kadire was still hitting cleanup or about there, so it was a while ago.
Still a nice park, though, I suppose, back then even.
Yeah, it was.
Just not the same.
I'd put PNC at the top of my list, but St. Louis is certainly there. I was in St. Louis a few years back, but they were not home at the time, so I was unable to see a game.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, it would be fun if this was live, too, so that we could be kind of like a simulcast. And maybe we'll have that technology in the future. But for now, Joe Mauer takes a walk. I want to ask you, this is a slash line of a certain player that I think we've both been enthused by. 282, 306, 547. That is Mr. Eddie Rosario. And he has been red hot of late.
Yeah.
Has stolen the home run lead on the team from Eduardo Escobar, another guy who's been sizzling hot. What have you taken away from Eddie Rosario? I know I've read some stuff that he's been using all the, you know, the whole field, but whatever it is, and I trust that his relationship with James Rowson is the kind where they can suss this kind of performance out. But
right.
Man, I tell you, he's been really good lately.
You know, he's been hot as a pistol, and you know this happens from time to time for Eddie Rosario, where he just kind of locks in and he can carry the club for a little while. My biggest thing, and I don't necessarily have, you know, the data to back. I don't necessarily have the data to back it up,
mm-hmm.
but to me, from just watching kind of the eye test, it looks like he's laying off pitches
mm-hmm.
when he's struggling, he's more apt to chase. So when he does that, when he makes the pitcher kind of come to him, and he's a very good bad ball hitter. He's an extraordinary bad ball hitter. But when he stays in the zone and kind of stays within himself as a hitter and kind of locks in, he becomes all the more dangerous.
He's in hunt mode, but not for
yeah.
whatever he can eat. You know, it's like he's gone
right.
from, I guess maybe like a shrew or like one of those mice that will eat whatever, to like a lion who will search out and seek out the fattest, most luscious prey. And when he finds pitches he can handle, he just thumps them. And yeah, I know
I'll
that.
I
know that metaphor is goofy, but you know what? I can own it. I can own it.
Hey, I'll give it to you. You got there. It was a little messy. It was a little roundabout, but we got there.
You know what? Knock down. You fire it over to first. As long as you make the play, we live with it. By the way,
just keep the ball in front of you.
How about me tweeting on Saturday, or was it? It might have been Friday. Joe Mauer should really lead off. Lo and behold, Paul Molitor reads the tweets and
he must.
Joe Mauer. Yeah, right. We had a nice little conversation at his desk the other day, a little exclusive one-on-one, and actually we had a lot of fun with it because he's a heck of a guy.
Sure.
But, yeah, he must read the tweets because I tell you what, Joe Mauer batting leadoff, I'm all for it, and I think it was – I won't say it was necessarily overdue, but let me tell you, Joe Mauer batting leadoff is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say it. I think it was a bit overdue.
Sure.
But I think it's something certainly that the previous regime, the previous manager, would not have been amenable to, among some other things.
Boy, they're
so
a disaster, by the way.
Yeah,
the Detroit
they
Tigers.
Are. They
Oof.
Are, but I think he has them playing actually better than I would have anticipated them playing. I mean, I think we all knew they would be a disaster, but I mean, I thought they would be kind of in the Chicago, Kansas City realm of things, and
yeah.
they're staying, you know, semi-respectable at this point.
It's a long season, I'll just say that much.
It is, it is, it is.
So, Eddie Escobar.
It's a bad bullpen over there.
Right. Eddie Escobar has been just tremendous. His slash line eerily reminiscent of what Miguel Sano might be doing if he was healthy and on, you know, working on all cylinders. What is your level of being impressed with Escobar at this point? Because, I mean, I know he's 29, you know, going on 30 and in a walk year.
Yeah.
But, man, I mean, he's just been wonderful. Somebody asked me if... They traded Jeff Samardzija in fantasy for him and asked me if he's legit, and I'm like,
of course he is, yeah.
I said, well, here's the problem. Like, I don't know how playing time is going to shake out when Jorge Polanco comes back and Miguel Sano comes back. But I tell you what, he's rolling right now and showing no signs of stopping. 10 walks to this point this year and 118 plate appearances, that's way above what he's done before. Ride the wave, man. Ride the wave.
Yeah, I mean, he's giving you no reason to ever want to sit him, I mean, when Jorge Polanco comes back. Right. And there are going to be ways to get him at bats where he's still going to play four or five times a week in that scenario. I think against lefties, you're going to see a lot of Sano DHing if he's back, and Escobar at third, maybe Lomo riding the pine against some lefties.
Or Spelling Mauer if it's a lefty that there's numbers for.
Right, or Spelling Mauer. There's going to be ways to fit him in where he's almost going to play every day, which I think, I mean, if it continues, you kind of have to do at this point. For me right now, it's better than this, but it's very reminiscent of the Eduardo Nunez first half that got him to the All-Star game a few years back.
More walks, though.
More walks, yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, if this continues, he might be an All-Star representative for the Minnesota Twins, which would be just incredibly cool. But, for his journey and how he's thought of, it would be incredibly cool.
By the way, Kepler just hit a double that was strangely reminiscent of the Eduardo Escobar doubles we've grown accustomed to. There's got to be some kind of nickname we can come up for that. You know, like, you know, there's Pesky's pole.
I like the Esky hole.
Esky corner. Yeah, I mean, the dude goes to Fogo de Chao three, four times a week. We don't need to worry about, like, saying something that's going to be not, you know, he's already a baller. We're not going to rip him.
He's fantastic.
So the Esky hole, Esky's corner. If people listening have an idea for a ball hit into the corner like that, you know, I always think of the left field corner at Old Yankee Stadium as the Shannon Stewart corner because he made that great catch over there. And then Joe Mauer's foul line, obviously. Thank you very much. Who's the umpire again? I can never.
Phil Cuzzy. Son of a gun.
Yeah, he's even got his own restaurant near Target Field. Doggone it. I don't know. I just if someone can come up with a good name for that right field corner, the Esky hole is kind of the best one we got. Pesky pole, Esky hole. That's the best we got right now. By the way, catching situation, Bobby Wilson contract purchase, they shifted Irvin Santana to the 60-day DL to make space for Bobby Wilson. Now, Bobby Wilson playing back-to-back days, I'm not totally sure how I feel about that, but he's basically the Chris Jimenez the Chris Jimenez of modern-day times. In fact, I'm wondering if Chris Jimenez wishing he had signed with the Twins, because I think he's rotting in Iowa right now. But how excited are you to see Mitch Garver here with Jason Castro on the shelf? Because Castro, man, he was really struggling.
Excited to see Garver get more everyday playing time, which I think he will. I think the back-to-back days for Wilson here is just a product of them wanting a guy who is a veteran catcher and who caught they had Castro in his first start. Mm-hmm. But then wanting a guy who's a veteran catcher with Romero, who caught him in Rochester this year. So I think that's why Wilson's in the lineup tonight. But I'm excited to see more regular playing time from Mitch Garver. I think he can improve defensively, but I think he's a relatively big upgrade with the bat over Castro and certainly over Bobby Wilson.
Well, and it's also worth noting that Wilson probably caught Romero at least once or twice early this season, whereas I know Garver spent all year at AAA last year, but Romero was at Chattanooga all last year, so they never intersected, at least not in the last year or so. Maybe in the lower levels briefly. But, I'm just excited to see what Garver can do in a little bit longer stretch of playing time. And that's more because of how bad Castro was than it's really me being super psyched about Garver's future. I think Garver's a fine player and a heck of a guy. I love talking to him. And, in fact, I'm working on a feature about him picking up that bunt foul that got called fair. But, you know, I don't think he's going to be a superstar or anything like that.
No.
But at the same time, Castro has just been so bad offensively that it feels like an extended look at Garver is certainly the right thing. Logan Morrison heating up a little bit as well. What was your level of concern early on? Because when you get into that, like, 4-for-40 funk or whatever he was, it takes a long time to dig out. I mean, he's been good for 2 weeks now and has still only got a 620 OPS.
Yeah, I was a little concerned, but I kind of kept reminding people around me who would give me crap about the Lomo signing and kind of reminding myself that it is so early, and this guy did absolutely mash last year. Mm-hmm. And clearly this, you know, the 4-for-48 streak or whatever it was is not indicative of the type of player he is. It's just a bad stretch. So it's nice to see him starting to pull out of it. Came through I think it was a 1-2 off speed pitch from Avalon yesterday where he pulled it down the right field line.
And lefty
in front.
Not bad.
Lefty to lefty, fell behind 0-2 in the count and was able to stay on an off speed pitch just enough to yank it into the corner. So it's been it's been encouraging to see him start to come out of this thing, and hopefully that means good things for the Twins lineup as he begins to heat up into the summer here.
That bullpen in Chicago, not to back up too far, is horrible. It's Nate Jones.
It's not good.
And, you know, Joaquin Soria is all right. But I tell you what, if you had asked me to name who was in that bullpen before that series, I mean, I know guys like Jake Petrichka and Zach Putnam have moved on.
Yep.
Or maybe they're still in the organization, but they're hurt. I think Petrichka's a free agent because he got hurt with, like, a shoulder. But, man alive, I mean, Bruce Rondon, like, leftover, warmed over Bruce Rondon is not a good look.
I think Petrichka is in Toronto. I think I just saw him.
Yeah, it might be right.
Back.
He's from Minnesota, by the way.
He is. He's from Faribault,
I think. Yep.
Yep. By the way, Escobar just had one of those at-bats that we talk about occasionally where it's like, what are you doing on the 2-2?
Yep.
Off-speed pitch that he chases down, but hopefully Rosario can come through.
I think
here.
That's why he's a career, probably like a 272 hitter. Maybe on Stat Wars we'll have that one of these days.
There we go.
Whose return are you more excited about, Trevor May or Irvin Santana from a I know Irvin's probably the obvious answer, but what would it take for you to swing the pendulum to May? And
I'm actually more excited for Trevor May.
Is that right?
Well, just because we haven't seen him in so long. I think Santana will contribute more,
sure.
But we haven't seen Trevor May in so long, and I really like him as a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think he can contribute to this ball club. And when he was last a starter for the Twins before they inexplicably threw him to the bullpen for Mike Pelfrey a couple of years back, he had pitched relatively well. So I'm excited to see kind of what he can bring to the table here, how he is health wise, and frankly, how they use him, because it may come that they might need him in the rotation, or they might use him as more of that multi-inning weapon out of the bullpen. It'll be interesting to see how he's used.
Should I or should I not make a Gant Herbeck joke during tonight's game
on Twitter? I mean, I'm all for it. Ron Gant was out, by the way.
Oh, well, I mean, the umpire ruled him out. What more is there
to
do?
Gant was out.
Yep, there's nothing more.
Ooh, I'm a little behind you. I'm streaming this on Sling. That 2-1, that 2-0 strike to Rosario was very outside.
Yeah.
I also have the game day pulled up so I can see it on the strike. Yeah. That's in the other batter's box.
Yeah, that's 6 inches off the plate, and I can understand that. That's old Eddie. That's old Eddie swinging at that. He's faced four balls now, and that's about three plate appearances worth, and he's done that here in one plate appearance. He's probably getting a little antsy. I bet he jumps all over this one. But
let's hope so. Yeah, he's shown good discipline in this plate appearance.
When you're kind of reading between the lines as far as Byron Buxton coming back, and I was in the building when Molitor suggested that they may not need him on a rehab stint, and now Mike Berardino's kind of hinting at that too. Do you feel like we're a day or two away from it?
Yeah, I think he's gonna. I think the first game of the Anaheim series is what they're shooting for. So I think they're shooting for Thursday. I think he'll be activated. And my guess on a corresponding move then would be Lamar being sent to Rochester.
Yeah, I suppose at least for the time being, because you probably can't send out Petit. Oh, hey, jumped on it for a double. I'm sorry. I just
no, please. I'll take the spoilers. I'll take them. If they're positive, I'll take them.
He went into the Esky hole for a double. So. Yeah, I think Lamar's got to be it, because you don't need a bench of two outfielders, no infielders, and a catcher. So
right.
I think the writing on the wall is that.
I don't think they'll send out a pitcher. I don't think they would send out McGill. I think they're going to roll with 13 for a little bit.
I've really enjoyed McGill, to be honest with you. I mean,
part of it
is probably me as a reporter getting time with him, and like
sure.
He's been super, super gracious with his time and talking to me about stuff just beyond baseball. I mean, it's... His sister followed our old Locked On Twins account, and
oh, awesome!
Yeah, I mean, after the show was defunct, I'm gonna have to give up that account. By the way, I got to think about sending that over to Tommy. But just really cool to anytime that happens. You know, one time I pissed off Christian Pryor's wife, and I had the audacity to say he was
Stephen Pryor's wife.
Yeah, right. I said that he was struggling when he had what was it, like a 1.30 ERA in Rochester, but he had 9 strikeouts and 11 walks in 10 innings,
yeah.
Or something like that. I was like, yeah, it hasn't been good. And she's like, LOL, you have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, that happens from time to time.
Your husband was out of baseball a year later. I'm sorry.
Hey,
that's about as dickish as I can be. But it's like, seriously, I just. Anyway, let's shift over to the pitching side of things. Obviously, Jose Berríos a little more embattled, but how about Kyle Gibson? He's really looked good lately.
He has looked good, and he's looked good all year. He sustained it so far through the first 5 weeks, and it's very encouraging. He pitched well, really well again yesterday. So it's good to see from Kyle Gibson. If the Twins can get that Kyle Gibson for the majority of the year, the rotation will be just fine.
Yeah, if that happens, I'm really not sure what they're going to do when Trevor May and Ervin Santana are back, because I know Fernando Romero can go back to the minors. I know he can go to the bullpen. And there's never a problem of having too much pitching, because it always shakes itself out. Some guy
goes
to the DL or you designate somebody. Something happens. Something always happens. But it's a good problem to have. Molitor, in fact, said the same. it was maybe like Phil Miller said, is it possible when these guys all get healthy you could have too much pitching? And Molitor says, man, love to cross that bridge when we get there, but that'd be a good problem to have.
Yeah, too much pitching doesn't exist in my mind.
Well, keep in mind the Mets a few years ago when we thought Harvey and Matz and Syndergaard and they had Zach Wheeler. They haven't had that all. Well, excuse me, I think that this year they broke camp with the rotation of the five guys they had always wanted all along.
Yep.
And it wasn't long before Seth Lugo's making starts and Gisellman's now in the bullpen. And, it kind of all flares up and all of a sudden you're getting starts to who's the lefty that they signed from the Royals?
To that point,
Jason
PJ
Vargas.
Conlon is starting tonight.
Who is it?
PJ Conlon.
Yeah,
who they
whatever
just
that
called
is.
Up when they
whatever
put DeGrom on the DL. He's starting tonight for the Mets.
Yeah,
so
DeGrom. I didn't even mention DeGrom, who looks like a completely different guy with his head or his haircut.
He does. I don't like it.
What did you think of John Curtis's haircut, by the way, when he came up? That was was special.
It was interesting, we'll say that, for sure.
That's probably as diplomatic as we can be. Looks like John Gant's inning is over. What do you throw, like 30 pitches? 31, 32. That's 31. A good way to get him to work. I don't know much about this bullpen. I know Cardinal fans really hate how Mike Matheny uses his bullpen. So maybe a good sign for the Twins. It'd be really nice, though, if Romero came out with a quick 1-2-3 on, like, 8 pitches. I'm not saying I think it's going to happen, but...
Sure would. Yeah, 32 pitches, and they played, 16 innings last night? So the bullpen should be a little taxed.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I've been tweeting that the Twins' bullpen is pretty good when everything gets lined up right. Just listen to these ERAs of the Twins' top five relievers, their core five. Fernando Rodney, 3.86. Addison Reed, 3.06. Ryan Pressly, 102. Trevor Hildenberger, 377. Zach Duke, 386. Now, I know for instance, Hildenberger's FIP is still 5.32.
Yep.
That's five guys, though, with an ERA plus of 113 or better. Pressly's is 425. Matt McGill, through five innings, has allowed just one earned run. It was on a home run with five strikeouts and only a walk. The pieces are in place, call me crazy if you must, for a decent bullpen here. Even Taylor Rogers has looked a little better of late. His FIP is 251, his ERA is 7.330, which is crazy. But am I crazy in saying that I don't think this bullpen is terrible?
No, I mean, I don't think you are, and I think a lot of people are maybe assuming that it is just because of how some of the early games have gone with the bullpen, Rodney a couple times, struggling, Addison Reed being walked off twice. But I would argue that the bullpen is actually better than it looks, as you're saying, and that the arrow is pointing up on all those guys.
What?
Like, Hildenberger's figured it out.
What? Yeah, he has. He said he was just using a little bit of mechanical things, not too much, which is good, because he just doesn't quite have the velocity to overcome some mistakes when things go sideways on him.
You don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. If I were to ask you what you think the Twins' strikeouts per nine rate is right now, what would you guess?
As a staff?
As a staff.
8.5?
9.4.
Oh, it is higher than I thought.
Isn't that crazy?
Okay. Like, yeah, that's pretty good.
So for their bullpen, it's 9.3, 9.7, 12.3, 6.3, and 13.9.
Sure.
For the core five that I was telling you about, McGill is 9.0. The pitching staff is a lot of things. Not particularly good overall this season, has been... the case. But I really do think now that they are playing every single day and getting into a rhythm, better things should happen. I won't necessarily say good things, but better things are on the way.
Well, I think the rotation is going to be better. I mean, this isn't going to be the Lance Lynn you see all season.
Talk about that in a second here after you're done.
Right, but in terms of the K per nine, Kyle Gibson's kind of become a strikeout pitcher.
10.2.
Yeah, right. Insane. Fernando Romero now on the staff is more of a strikeout guy, and Barrios is kind of a strikeout guy. And, you know, Lynn can shove some fastballs by people, too. So there's been a definite shift in terms of the whole pitch-to-contact mantra and those low K per nines of Twins Yore.
What did you think of Lance Lynn against the Chicago White Sox? Because, again, you have to account for style, and you have to account for opposition, but you can only play who you play. And that was a really good get-back-on-the-bicycle start for Lance Lynn. No walks, at least not as many. He had none late into the start. I don't think he walked anybody. But just overall, a pretty good start.
Yeah, it was. I guess my opinion of the start is colored kind of by the opponent, but more by the first inning, which was an absolute mess. He was getting hit all over the yard, and it was an absolute mess, but he wriggled out of it with the really timely double play ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, that had the potential to snowball incredibly quickly. And he got out of it with a fortuitous double play ball and then was able to settle in. I don't think he gave up another hit until like the fifth, which was good. It was a good get back on the horse sort of start. But for a while there, it teetered on the brink for me, and I thought, uh-oh, here we go again.
Speaking of, Romero's not getting some of those calls off the plate that John Gant was. Now, Gant obviously
there's a couple tight ones that he's not getting,
Yeah, that doesn't bode well for a kid whose command is not great, although that was a came back with a nice 1-0 slider to Harrison Bader, a player who I like a lot. Let's see here. I'm trying to think of if I have anything else. We'll dive into the questions we took on. We are looking for also, name for our question segment. We did Twinquisition. I don't think we should bring that over. I think we should come up with something new. So if people have ideas, or Sticks, if you have ideas, again, feel free to throw them at us. But hey, let's take a bunch of questions. We got a handful of them. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
So Super Bowl 53 or bust says, will the Twins improve win percentage to age when Sano and Buxton return?
I'm not sure I understand the question, sir.
Will their winning core? Oh, you'll see what I was owing about in just a second. Will they be better compared? I don't understand the question. I should have vetted it before I read. Win percentage minus age. Oh, percent age. That's what it is. Will the Twins improve win percent
age? Oh, the winning
age?
Percentage.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question in my mind. I mean, again, you got to lengthen out the lineup. Your bench will look better. I mean, what's your bench when everyone's healthy? It's probably Wilson, Adrianza, and Grossman, right?
Yeah, I mean, which is not ideal. Yeah, 96 on the black, we'll take that, by the way. I just saw what you were owing at. My goodness. Dirty. Yeah. Oh, that's disgusting. The movement on that thing?
Yep.
And that's incredible.
Lance Lynn's velo the other day was pretty good, too. I saw 95 or 96 with good location.
The velo hasn't been the issue for him. It's more just the location and not being able to throw the ball over, throw the fastball over consistently.
It reminds me of, like, the old video games on, like, Sega Dreamcast. It'd be like NBA 2K2, where you had to have the two right triggers, like the left and right trigger, and then when you even them out, you shoot free throws, and you'd have to just touch them, like, minimally, but the same amount. And it would line up.
I didn't think we would get a Dreamcast reference tonight.
Yeah,
that's
well,
awesome.
You know, this is what happens. Oh, that ball was hit hard. Eddie, oh, we made the catch. I'm sorry.
Oh, good. No, that's fine.
We're doing play-by-play for a show
that people are not.
The game is going to be released now, half an hour from now. So
that's all right.
Sorry. All right, so, yeah, I think the Twins will definitely... I'm glad that we figured out what the question was asking before we just moved on from it. I suspect the Twins will be over 500 by the end of May.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I don't think that's crazy. And also, if you get too far ahead of yourself thinking it'll be, before that, it can look bad. And look like the Twins are not playing all that well. And obviously at 13-17, they're really not. But if they get back to 500.
That's a hell of a catch. Sorry. Right. I just caught that. He robbed a two-run homer,
right?
Arguably.
If they get back to 500 by the All-Star break, they're fine with the way this division is.
I think they'll be just fine. They have a lot of, and we've touched on this, they have a lot of games left against three very poor teams.
Yep.
So they'll be okay.
Sports and Whatever, Sports Puzzle, one of our favorite question askers from the old program, said that they've heard some things about the MLB being correlated to the NBA in terms of top heaviness. How BS is that on a 1 to 10 scale? So I guess what it comes down to is like the whole super team concept of like the Cavs back when LeBron was bringing guys in. Well, more Miami, I guess. But basically what they're saying is, are you worried about super teams ruining baseball? And on a scale of 1 to 10, how preposterous is that? And I would say like a 7 or an 8 because...
Yeah, I think that's
look at the Dodgers, for crying out loud. We look at, you and I look at the Dodgers and think, man, that team is awesome. And then I read Dodgers writers and they're like, they had no plan for injuries. And I'm like, your 40-man roster is entirely made up of guys who can all play in the big leagues.
Right.
You have guys on the fringes who can play in the big leagues. Oh, by the way, you go get Alex Verdugo when you need your fifth outfielder. Like, I do not feel bad.
Well, yeah, but then, I get their point to a certain extent when you look up and you see Max Muncy's playing third base, right?
Not so my
I
problem.
No, right? No, I completely understand. But it's just the attrition rate in the MLB, too. It's such a long season that it's really, even when you build a super team, things might not go to plan.
How bad are you going to feel, though, when they go get Manny Machado and spend some of this prospect capital? You know, they eat the money on like a Yadier Alvarez.
You know,
his stock is a little down, so they eat some money, and Baltimore's like, oh, yeah, we want a guy like that. You know, I'm not going to feel bad.
I'm going to be like, you
know what? This is what the Dodgers do. So I'm not shedding any tears. I'm not worrying about them being a power team that's playing poorly. And yeah, I think it's 7-8 BS because here's the other thing. Everybody talks about tanking and how it hurts baseball. How good is tanking for you when you're the best tanking team? You win 72 games and you pick 10th next year because 10 freaking teams are tanking in front of you and you were so bad at it that you pick 10th.
Right, and which again, is not ideal.
Well, picking first overall, look at who the Twins picked. Royce Lewis, just awesome in what, the Midwest League? Is that where you're at? Look at what Hunter Green is doing in the Midwest League. How many of the schmucks?
Atrocious.
How many of the schmucks savaged the Twins for not picking Hunter Green? Oh, by the way, we're not talking about him struggling with the bat. We're talking about pitching. His number one with a bullet skill.
Right.
There's no bat to fall back on here.
It's very hard to tank in the MLB and have it work because the MLB draft, I would argue more than any other sport, is such an inexact science. You just don't know. These kids are so young.
Well, we also,
a lot of them may have not have swung a wood bat very much before. You just don't know.
We also focus on the positives, the Cubs, the Astros. How about the teams that lose year in and year out and never get better? The Pittsburgh Pirates from 1992 until 2009. Were awful.
Yeah.
They lost. They had all these high picks, and they made these picks and didn't get anybody to show for it. The Padres picking that Matt Bush, you know, first overall, one of the biggest busts until he went to prison and then resurfaced. I mean, tanking in baseball, people are taking the NFL approach of what works for, you know, what's good for the goose must be good for the gander. And those teams were like the only ones tanking at that time. The Nationals.
It really only worked for the Astros.
Yeah.
And you could argue the Nationals with back-to-back superstars at number one, which that comes off.
What would have been a better sequence to pick 1-1 in back-to-back years? I mean,
the Strasburg and Harper, nothing.
Unless one of the 1-1s the year before or after Alex Rodriguez was particularly special, which would have been 1993, I think, is the year he went 1-1. So I don't know who went 1-1 in 92, and I don't know who went 1-1 in 94.
We could look it up.
Yeah, but I mean, if one of those players turned into a 30 or 40 WAR player, and you could have gotten A-Rod and that player 1-1 back-to-back years, that might be close. But again, when one team or two teams are tanking, and one of them happens to win the World Series, everyone's like, it's not a copycat league like the NFL. And I'm just like, at some point, when the team, when the Twins pounce on a Lance Lynn for $14 million or $13 million for 1 year,
right?
I don't know what to tell you, because here's the
and
deal.
To the point, I'll say this though, to the point about tanking, I'll let you finish your point.
No.
I'll go.
Well, because maybe the Twins win the World Series this year. They're not one of the super teams, and they're not one of the tankers.
Right.
If one of the teams in the middle wins the World Series, next year's off season is going to be one of the most fascinating things you or I have seen as baseball consumers in our adult lives.
Yeah, it'll be crazy.
Right.
It's gonna be nuts anyway. But here we'll go. We'll just a couple back to backs that worked out really well. Phil Nevin in 92, Alex Rodriguez in 93.
That would have been
pretty good.
Yeah.
2000 to 2001, Adrian Gonzalez and Joe Mauer.
Okay. Or even Josh Adrian Gonzalez and Mark Pryor. If Pryor doesn't go to the Cubs, maybe everything's different.
Right. Yeah. It's well, and to the point of the Astros tanking and it working. They missed on two of those three first overall picks.
Yeah.
They picked Carlos Correa, but they missed on Brady Aiken, and they missed on Mark Appel. Mark Appel's out of baseball now.
Didn't he retire, or he's taking some time off?
I believe he retired. I think he's done. He's 26.
I don't know if he will ever come back, but he's going to be a minor league deal guy anyway. It's not like he's going to be a highly sought-after prospect. I mean,
and Aiken is just a middle-of-the-road guy in the Indians organization now because of some elbow issues, so it's entirely an exact science.
Yeah, so, I mean, it took them 5 years of bottoming out to the point where wasn't there a stretch where their games weren't even on cable?
Right. Like, yeah, I believe so. I think they were blacked out.
That's almost impossible to come back from.
Right.
Steve Lean wants to know, if you've ever watched a prospect who your own eyes told you greater things were coming for than their scouting report, who was that player?
That's a tough one.
I mean, okay, I will say this. I knew at age 16, or I think he might have been just about 17, that Francisco Lindor was going to be special when I saw him play in Minnetonka here that summer. It was like 2009. But other than that, I mean, let's see. When I originally read this tweet, I thought he meant like a prospect that I saw with my own eyes, and I've never been to.
Sure.
Never been to Rochester, Chattanooga, New Britain, any of those. So I'm trying to think of the prospects who I was really high on that, really, really panned out. Nobody's really coming to mind. Anybody for you?
I'll throw just a current one out right now, and I might eat my words and be completely wrong on this. Fernando Romero. This is kind of cherry picking, but he's obviously a highly touted guy. But I think a lot of the publications have him as more of a mid-rotation type, and I think he's more. I think there's a potential to be more than a mid-rotation guy. I honestly think he can be an ace of a staff. So yeah. we'll see if that pans out. But that's just the one that comes to mind. Otherwise, I haven't had enough exposure, I would say, to prospects to see them in person to really answer that question, honestly.
Yeah, I feel like maybe someone like if I had a strong opinion about like Akil Baddoo or Bruzar Graterol or something like that, and even then. Wow, Romero's made contact on two pitches.
Good
again,
for him.
Spoiler alert.
It's fine.
other than that, though, no, I can't say that I have. I would say though that if it was anybody, maybe Ryan Pressly before last year when he really hadn't broken out yet would have been that kind of guy. But no, I don't think so. Mauer Power says or asks rather. Even though it was the White Sox, how much of a confidence boost do you see this past weekend being for the club?
Needed at least three. Needed at least three wins in that scenario. The come from behind win on Sunday, yesterday, I think hopefully was a big turning point. I think it very well could be. So we'll see. But we needed at least three there. Getting walked off in the opener really hurt, but coming back and getting the next three and really, really does help. So hopefully a confidence boost.
I agree with you. Mauer Power also wants to know if Romero has success, will he still be sent down when May and Santana get healthy because he is the quote-unquote easy guy to send down? Which we did address, but would you – this is so tough because here's the deal.
Yeah.
Would you rather have him work out of the bullpen and just give you a super bullpen, or would you rather – I mean –
if he can throw innings like he's thrown his first six and two-thirds.
But Jake Odorizzi's not going to the bullpen.
Lynn would be the guy.
You're not doing anything with Lance Lynn. There's just no way.
I mean, I've just given the numbers, he would have to be the guy if you were going to keep Romero in the rotation.
Yeah, and I don't know
how it's going to happen because Gibson's pitching too well. So it's probably going to be either Romero to the bullpen and add you another weapon, or you're going to have to send him out, which would be too bad considering – well, if he keeps pitching like he is, it would be too bad.
Would you send out Taylor Rogers to keep Romero up?
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no question in my mind.
In the blink of an eye.
Yeah. Do you think Rogers has been close to being sent out at any point this year?
Not yet, but he can't get righties out.
He hasn't gotten lefties out this year.
He hasn't gotten lefties out, right?
Let's bring up the old splits here while you're talking.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't gotten lefties out. He needs to get lefties out. And I don't think this is a guy really, and I could be wrong, I don't think this is a guy who's ever going to get righties out consistently. So if he's only a loogie and he can't get lefties out, then, yeah, there's no reason for him to take a 25 spot.
So,
you know, and
righties are hitting 320, 357, 400 against him. So solid. I mean, lots of hits, mostly singles, right? 6 of the 8 hits have been singles. Lefties are hitting 348, 400, 348. So lefties are 8 for 23, but they've all been singles. Now, the issue is when you come in with runners on, you can't give up singles. You can't give up, you know what I mean? You just can't. You know, they can't bring them into dirty innings or messy innings because those singles lead to runs. And so, honestly, this is a Terry Ryan pick. This is a Terry Ryan guy. I think if he had any value on the market, the Twins probably would move him.
Right.
And I don't think he's the kind of reliever they need to be falling over themselves not to worry about just flushing out for a fresh arm every fifth or sixth day like some good teams do.
And when it comes to the numbers crunch in terms of the roster, I just don't see how Philly Hughes is here much longer. I mean, you can't.
Yeah.
They clearly have zero confidence in the guy, and you can't really save a roster spot just because the guy is a pricey veteran when you only trust him to bring him into a 5-run game, one or the other,
one way or the other. At the end of the game,
you can't.
Too. It was, yeah.
And he doesn't pitch well in those situations.
Yeah.
It was not good.
It was a friend of mine who I messaged on Twitter, but he and I have the same kind of conversations you and I do, and I said to him, Phil Hughes, the reliever, .. looks a lot like Phil Hughes, the starter. And
I hate that,
but it's the way it was. And again, it's one inning, and you know, maybe things change, but I don't know how much time he's going to get to prove that it's a different situation.
Man, if 92 is all you can get out of Phil Hughes in a short stint, that's not going to do it.
No, nothing
it's,
else.
It's not going to do it.
Yeah. Corey Engelhart wants to know, when will we see Tyler Jay and Nick Gordon up here? Seems like both could help the current club. I mean, yeah, they could, but neither are on the 40-man roster. There are some slush spots on the 40, whether it's Bobby Wilson or Matt McGill, if you are a little more down on McGill than I am.
Sure.
But at this point, I'd probably flush out Phil Hughes before McGill and Taylor Rogers before McGill.
Can I toot my horn a little bit on the 40-man stuff?
Sure, let's go.
We talked a little bit about it this offseason, and you were way more solid on Dietrich Gans than I was, and they've outrighted him, and he cleared waivers.
Oh, he did. I didn't see that he cleared.
He cleared waivers, and now he's in Rochester. So they took him off. Nobody wanted him. Ryan was right the whole time.
Well, and his numbers this year were not good. I mean, it was
a
4 ERA and, like, as many strikeouts as walks. So, yeah, not good. Now, again, he's posted numbers everywhere he's been. And that doesn't mean he won't be put back on at some point. But the way the arms race or the totem pole or however you want to, the power rankings, whatever, he's a ways down there, just like JT Chagua might have been when they designated him.
What do they regret that one?
Yeah, I mean.
I do.
But I mean, we're also a little more married to those guys. And
sure.
like I've heard, maybe he's not exactly a good clubhouse guy. And I don't know. We'll
just
see. It's possible. So let's see here. Andy, Carbonite Andy says, do you believe the novels of Susan Sontag are self-indulgent, overrated crap? Absolutely. I'm totally.
Why do I? Oh, is this Bull Durham, right?
I have no idea.
I think this is a Bull Durham reference.
I literally have no idea, and I'm just playing along.
I type that into Google. I think this is Bull Durham, and I think it's referencing the speech with some words that I can't say. That's a wonderful speech, but I could be entirely wrong. But in that case, yes, I do believe this. I do believe this.
Let's see.
I might be just making an ass out of myself right now. I could be entirely wrong.
Well, consider the source, right?
That's fair.
Let's see. Fiction fair. Works.
Okay.
Nonfiction. I'm not finding anything. I'm going to say yes, but I literally don't know any of this stuff.
I believe the novels of Susan. Crash Davis, what I believe. You better believe it. I got it right. I just typed in I believe the novels of Susan Sontag, and it was the Bull Durham speech.
Oh.
So I respect your question. It was a deep cut. And yes, I agree with anything Crash Davis has said about baseball or literature in this case.
Nice. And the last one is Al Strain. He says, it took four batters to get to my favorite part of Torrey Hunter calling games. Dick Bramer becoming mildly, yet obviously annoyed when Torrey teases him about his age. By the way, we don't only need questions. We can take comments as long as they...
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, hey. Marcus Carr from Pitt transferring to the University of Minnesota to play basketball.
I think we'll take it. I don't know anything about him, but it's a Pitt transfer.
Oh, Pitt's transferring out like six guys this year. Like they're just all leaving. It's almost like when Tubby took over Memphis and those brothers both left and went to Kansas.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can't think of their last name, but and Tubby
they were the bar. Oh no, I don't remember. Okay, it's not ringing a bell for me.
No, they're both studs. One of them got in trouble with the law and all that. Anyway, yeah, that's all I got. Anything you got to close with? It was a great, spirited program. Nice to do these just twice a week instead of every single weeknight.
Yeah, no, this is fun. I'm enjoying it. Let's keep it up, and hopefully Fernando Romero can keep it up as well. So far. Dating it here, but so far a good inning and a third. So.
Well, hey, thanks for listening, folks. Midwest Swing, you can find us again on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod, at Brandon_Warren for me, at 2_ Canes with a Z, at Zone Coverage MN. 5-star reviews on iTunes. Check us out, Stitcher, Libsyn, and we will see you on the other side. Let's see, we'll probably be previewing or breaking down a little bit of the Angels series as we come up again. By the way, what do you think of those 9 o'clock first pitches? Do you like those or do you hate them?
I'm only in grad school right now, so I can deal with it and stay up to watch the game. But otherwise, when I'm starting to be a professional educator, I'm going to hate them. I'm going to hate them a lot.
Professional, yeah, quote unquote.
Yes.
That's funny. All right, well, hey, thanks for hanging out, and we will catch you on the flip-flop. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.